Okay, check 1, 2. There we go. We've got sound. We've got sound. Might be very low sound, but that's the closest I can get. I'm going to have to switch the laptop speakers off. Because there'll be endless feedback. There we go. So, let me move this a bit closer. That's as close as I can get to the microphone in this setup, but it'll have to do. I think it should be enough. So, welcome to Technocratic Tyranny News, Technocratic Tyranny Blues. I think what I'm going to do today is just have a look at some YouTube coverage, so Sky News, GB News coverage of Rishi Sunak. So let's have a quick look there. I think probably Rishi Sunak's going to be an authoritarian nightmare. All right, here's James O'Brien talking about Jacob Rees-Mogg.
"12:34 is the time. You almost have to. I'd get whiplash if I was paying attention, really. If I was concentrating slightly harder on Jacob Rees-Mogg's latest contortions, I'd probably get whiplash. Jacob Rees-Mogg has told the Daily Telegraph that he no longer believes Rishi Sunak is a socialist. That's something that he believed in July or of this year, not of 1817. He no longer believes that Rishi Sunak is a socialist. He said he could never serve in Rishi Sunak's cabinet because he was a backstabber and he betrayed Boris Johnson. Absolute disloyalty. Absolutely couldn't serve in it. Jacob Rees-Mogg, that was in July of this year. He's told the Daily Telegraph this morning that he no longer believes Rishi Sunak is a socialist and would now serve in his cabinet. I'm very rarely lost for words, but my goodness me. If there were any individual who just embodies how not the people that have led the corruption of the political discourse, not the individuals, because Johnson obviously is unique in the context of lying and smiling while he lied, but the people who went along with him, the people too stupid to understand the idiocy of Brexit, Rees-Mogg standing up in Dover and say, we're not going to introduce any checks, because it would bankrupt us. It'd be so expensive. Having spent years telling you that we had to leave the European Union in order to control our borders, we can't possibly control our borders because it would actually be prohibitively expensive. Now, in the space of July, August, September, October, three months, it's gone from describing Rishi Sunak as a socialist who he could never serve to saying, I no longer believe he's a socialist and would now serve in his cabinet. Groucho Marx, I got principles. And if you don't like them, I got others. But because he delivers it all in that ludicrous accent, a certain type of Brit thinks it must be somehow sensible or even perhaps intelligent. The man, I mean, thick as mince would be doing a disservice to mince. And it's not the lack of intelligence. That's why you send your children to places like Eton so that they get taught to mask their ignorance, their lack of basic intelligence, and flourish regardless. But it's the moral corruption there. It's the utter absence of backbone or integrity or decency. Never mind the truly egregious comments about the people who died in Grenfell Tower or food banks, the proliferation of food banks. Sometimes it's the little things that highlight the true moral bankruptcy of a man. And there it is, back in July. It's as if he's telling you, don't listen, anything that comes out of my mouth is meaningless, hollow, and devoid of moral worth, because if it came out of my mouth yesterday, the polar opposite could come out of my mouth tomorrow. It's 11:56, Rishi Sunak concluding his speech there to the, well, to the nation, effectively, turning around and walking back towards the door of 10 Downing Street, which will now, of course, be his front door. It was a good speech, that. I mean, I've got three obvious problems with it, the two of which were absolutely necessary. He has to pay some sort of tribute to his predecessors, but it was quite interesting that he chose to describe Liz Truss's policies as a mistake. He could have stayed quiet about them. I don't think he could have bigged them up or pretended that things had gone well, but he made it clear that part of his job is to fix some of the mess made by his immediate predecessor, and then warm words for the one before that, Boris Johnson, as well. I think that gets chalked up as absolutely necessary. And then, of course, still, and I've told you before, we're at least one, probably two, maybe more Conservative leaders away from reality recognition when it comes to Brexit. But that nod towards unleashing the benefits of Brexit was unfortunate. But that was a good speech. And in fact, that will have played very well. And regardless of whether you think this should or shouldn't matter, the fact of the matter is it does. That will play very well in financial circles. And indeed, on the world stage, it does look as if after a bizarre period of British politics dating back to the middle of 2019, when Boris Johnson effectively overthrew Theresa May, it does look as if a grown
knowingly to Liz Truss's mistake, saying that he had been elected in part to fix them. He said that difficult decisions will need to be made, and of course that relates to spending cuts that we will presumably get in the fiscal statement on Monday. But he made the point of saying, and this is the conversation you were having earlier about being ideological or pragmatic, and trying to bring some pragmatism to his premiership, saying that he will bring the same compassion that he brought during the pandemic with the furlough scheme to helping people through the current economic crisis. He went on to say that trust has to be earned, and he will earn the country's trust. And he also was quite critical, I thought, of Boris Johnson. Okay, he had, yes, because he talked about bringing integrity and professionalism to government, but he also tried to draw a line, and this is the argument of Jacob Rees-Mogg and Nadine Dorries and Christopher Chope, saying, well, actually, the 2019 election victory was Boris Johnson's mandate. It doesn't belong to anybody else, whether that's Rishi Sunak or Liz Truss. And Rishi Sunak saying, well, actually, the 2019 mandate was a Conservative mandate. It doesn't belong solely to Boris Johnson. And that's the argument around, of course, having a general election. That's not just to Labour, though. That is also, of course, to detractors, his own detractors within the Conservative Party. And trying to appear, finally, I think, as the statesman, saying, I know the high office I have accepted, and I hope to live up to its demands. A respect, of course, for the fact that he has now become Prime Minister, the highest office in the land, not since John Major, of course, as a leader made, well, actually Gordon Brown, sorry, apologies, made the transition from number 11 into number 10.
And as you say, the audiences are multiple, and they are all looking for different things. So, I mean, I don't know that many people would necessarily agree with him that the mandate delivered at the end of 2019 was for the Conservative Party. It was, unfortunately for him, built largely on Boris Johnson's lies. And so, you know, whether it's on Boris Johnson's electoral appeal or his lies, or actually, as I think the truth probably is, on both, his lies were his electoral appeal, then he's going to struggle to sell that. But he doesn't really need to in the short term.
And I think in the first instance, you're quite right to say that. I'm sure we will see the reaction from the markets in the coming hours will be positive to that speech. And as you say, the quote-unquote, the grown-ups are now firmly back in charge.
Well, I didn't quite say that. I said we have the impression that a grown-up is back in the building.
Okay.
Okay, then the next one is Andrew.
We've noticed that this new Prime Minister is our first of Indian heritage. He's a Hindu. He's very young to be Prime Minister, and he's richer than the King. But what is Rishi Sunak actually going to do? Over the course of the day, we've had some broad hints, so let me try a little light decoding. First, he is going to take unpopular decisions to cut spending and or raise taxes. No surprise there. Thanks to the pandemic, the Ukraine war, global inflation and Liz Truss's exuberant experiment, Britain now faces a black hole in the public finances of between 30 and 40 billion pounds. What Sunak called in Downing Street this morning a profound economic crisis. He spoke frankly of his predecessor's mistakes while saying he admired her restlessness. Good word, restlessness. I think it's our new Prime Minister's euphemism for mad as a box of frogs. He'd been chosen to fix the mistakes the frogs had made, which meant difficult decisions. Question is, Rishi, which decisions? As we heard on yesterday's show, he's a spreadsheet kind of guy, but he also knows that his maximum personal popularity happened when he splashed public money during the pandemic. And out today, outside number 10, he was very keen to remind us of that. We'd seen him, he said, during COVID, doing everything I could to protect people and businesses, adding, I promise you this, I will bring that same compassion to the challenges we face today. Now, if that means anything, and I devoutly hope it does, it suggests he will not be making cuts at the expense of the poorest. So perhaps he will be uprating benefits in line with inflation. The rest of what he said, promising integrity, professionalism and accountability at every level, and in what seemed like a swipe at Boris Johnson, promising to unite the country, not with words, but with action, was interesting enough, but frankly predictable. For me, the most alarming thing Sunak told us was, I am not daunted. Now, in my experience, when politicians bother to say they are not daunted, it's time for the rest of us to rummage around from the Kevlar helmets and the flak jackets. Apart from his words, Sunak's other signals this afternoon consisted in the reshaping of government, the sackings and resignations and then the hirings. He said he wanted to be inclusive and reach out to all parts of the party. Jeremy Hunt stays as Chancellor, James Cleverly stays at Foreign, Ben Wallace at Defence. An important message there to Ukraine. Michael Gove, we think, is returning to Levelling Up. And Grant Shapps, who briefly fizzed with Liz, is business. More controversially, Suella Braverman, who dreams of flying migrants to Rwanda, is back after 6 days out as Home Secretary. But with the departure of Jacob Rees-Mogg and Brandon Lewis, Kit Malthouse and Chloe Smith and Wendy Morton, it looks like a pretty dramatic clear-out of backers of both Truss and Johnson. And as with those two, back when, the biggest threat to Sunak right now is probably disloyalty on the back benches. In which case, this bold reshuffle showed us just how quietly confident our remarkably youthful Prime Minister really is.
So that's the LBC clips. Let's have a look and see what else we've got from Sky. The Sky clips are long. That's the trouble. They're 45 minute long. I prefer the 5 minute clips rather than 45 minute clips. All right. This one's James O'Brien again, but it's 10 minutes, so it's short enough to play, I think.
This is James Cleverly at 2 minutes to two on the 23rd of October, or yesterday, as it's known technically. The last few weeks show that being Prime Minister is tough and no other job in government is quite like it. I know Boris has learned lessons from his time in Number 10 and will ensure the focus is on the needs of the country from day one. I will be supporting him to return to the role of PM. So that, give or take a couple of minutes, was at 2 p.m. yesterday. Yesterday. Here he is, same bloke, at 8:05 this morning. So just knock off 8 minutes, take to just for the ease of calculation. 2 p.m., 10 hours, 18 hours later. Here's James Cleverly. We face great challenges at home and abroad. I said we needed experience at the top of government, and I stand... Sorry. We face great challenges at home and abroad. I said we needed experience at the top of government, and I stand by that. I don't know why I sound like I'm hosting Blankety Blank at the moment.
I watched it for the first time in a while at the weekend. Bradley Walsh in the chair these days. It's a cracking show. A timeless classic. We face great challenges at home and abroad. I said we needed experience at the top of government, and I stand by that. The candidate with the most experience is clearly blank. Who are you going to choose? Keith. Oh, Lord. The candidate with the most experience is clearly Rishi Sunak. He can count on my full support as RPM, and I will be voting for him. Rewind 18 hours. The last few weeks show that being PM is tough, and no other job in government is quite like it. I know blank has learned lessons from his time in Number 10 and will ensure the focus is on the needs of the country from day one. I will be supporting him to return to the role of PM. 18 hours later, he's back to Rishi Sunak. I mean, what do you do? What do I do on a day like today? And he's not the only one. Seriously, you may say he's a dreamer, but he's not, the only one. Nadeem Zahawi, arguably, has been even more embarrassing in the context of these ridiculous swings. Jacob Rees-Mogg, let's have a look at Jacob Rees-Mogg at about 5 to 10 yesterday morning. Ready? He's clearly going to stand. The people who are doing the numbers for Boris's campaign tell me he has the numbers. Jacob Rees-Mogg there demonstrating the intellectual acumen and grasp of the facts, natural talent that have propelled him to one of the highest offices in the land. Just have a little look at that. Boris Johnson, whether you love him or loathe him, we can all agree he is one of the biggest liars ever to pollute the public space in this country. And I say whether you love him or loathe him, we can all agree with some confidence. Because if, of course, you love him, one of the things you love about him is that his lies annoy the people who loathe him. So you've ended up being not just an apologist for a liar, but an actual cheerleader for a liar. But don't be embarrassed. Some of the best-known journalists in the land are on exactly the same bandwagon as you, or at least they were, until the wheels fell off yesterday evening. Because it turned out that he has all of the necessary nominations, but not necessarily in the right. I can't stop picking up 1970s and 1980s reference points. Sorry, wrong place. So he's got all the nominations, but they go to a different school. Jacob Rees-Mogg saying, national television yesterday, they've told me that he's got, Boris Johnson has told me something that I'm now going to repeat publicly, because if Boris Johnson has told him it, it must be true. How many people have publicly stated something or believed an assurance of Boris Johnson only to discover mere nanoseconds later that Boris Johnson was talking out of his well-upholstered backside? It's unbelievable what he's done to this country, isn't it? And again, don't feel bad if you were part of it, because many of the most powerful journalists and editors and newspaper owners in the country have assumed almost, I mean, sometimes it reads like erotic literature, the way they talk about Boris. Listen to this on the front page of the Daily Mail today. For the good of the party and the country, Mr. Johnson, actually, no, I should use an erotic literature voice. You ready for this? For the good of the party and the country, Mr. Johnson set his dream aside. This is a gesture of wisdom, honour and statesmanship. His time will come again. That's the Daily Mail talking about Boris Johnson today, Monday, October the 24th, 2022. For the good of the party and the country, Mr. Johnson set his dream aside. This is a gesture of wisdom, honour and statesmanship. His time will come again. These people are completely crackers. Whether they are debasing themselves on a scale never seen before in British politics, like James Cleverly and Nadeem Zahawi and Nadine Dorries and Jacob Rees-Mogg and all the rest of them. I wonder what they all have in common. Or they are essentially traducing centuries of journalistic tradition in this country by turning into a sort of Mills and Boone for Boris Johnson, while pretending that they have some sort of ideological or political foundation for their fetishization of this ridiculous man. It is, frankly, staggering. 9 minutes after 10 is the time. So you've got the, I mean, it's not even a U-turn. I don't even know what the words are. It's Groucho Marx, isn't it? I got principles, and if you don't like them, well, I got others. That's James Cleverly this morning and Nadeem Zahawi. Here's one. Here's possibly my favourite. Sir Robert Buckland. The knighthoods and the peerages that have been dished out by the last couple of prime ministers are truly
the grimmest legacy of their administrations. Some of the least... No, it wasn't my sexy voice. I decided not to do my sexy voice, all right? So stop sending me rude texts. The peerages and the knighthoods, it's breathtaking. The paucity of talent, the absence of integrity, the absolute bin juice that has been promoted into the House of Lords or given a knighthood by the last two or three prime ministers is Sir Robert Buckland, currently the Secretary of State for Wales. He has endorsed Rishi Sunak. Now, have a little pause on this. In the summer, Robert Buckland endorsed Rishi Sunak and then switched to Liz Truss halfway through the campaign. And now he's come out once again and endorsed Rishi Sunak. I believe his nickname in the cabinet is Yozza Hughes. Actually, that probably needs a little bit more explanation for younger listeners or blank-faced studio engineers like Keith. Gizzajob. Robert Gizzajob Buckland there. And again, they're queuing up to debase and humiliate themselves. I hope someone reminds Jacob Rees-Mogg that he said, Colin, please never do that voice again. All right, I promise I'll never do that voice again. Queuing up to debase himself. Jacob Rees-Mogg should be reminded that he said he would never serve in the socialist Rishi Sunak's cabinet. I didn't know where we were going to go this morning, but in many ways, it's a sort of pick and mix of political imbecility. Wherever you turn, you are reminded of the absolute idiocy of the clowns who've been driving this country for the last 6 years. And it doesn't end when Rishi Sunak gets the nod, as he probably will do later today. He's not going to be the one to finally admit the truth and begin to recognise the reality of Brexit. There was a massive Tory donor on the radio this morning, a chap called Guy Hands. Look him up. And finally, even on a network that has been trying to pretend that Brexit is all over and done with and that there's no need to return to, I said to you a few months ago that eventually they'd start pretending or claiming that, oh, we don't need to talk about it anymore. Well, that's just not going to wash, is it? Given that all of the economic damage we're suffering has been massively magnified and exacerbated by the ludicrous decision to become the first country in the history of the world to impose economic sanctions on itself. But Rishi Sunak, Theo Usherwood told me on Friday, I don't know if you missed this, you might want to sit down. Rishi Sunak was writing articles about why we should leave the European Union when he was still at school. So James Duddridge is probably the chap who gets the title for the most ridiculous knighthood and indeed the most pathetic performance over the last 24 hours in the context of British politics. But my God, there's a lot of competition. And here's the point, of course. If you have a concept of or a capacity for shame and embarrassment, then like me, you can't quite believe what you're seeing today, right? Nadeem Zahawi, without pausing, just jumps from one horse to another. Let's run through, if we can remember, the chronology of Nadeem Zahawi's public relationship with Boris Johnson. Can we see how it goes? So let's start with being a loyal cabinet minister and then announcing that he's got to go. Have we got the order wrong on this? And then accepting a job as Chancellor. And then 2 days later saying, actually, you should resign. And then announcing that you're backing him again for Prime Minister. And then announcing, actually, no, you're backing Rishi Sunak after all, because the wheels have just come off Boris Johnson's clown car yet again.
All right, I do like what James O'Brien does. He's very, very good at those types of monologues. Very good indeed. And I make no apologies for playing those. I don't know what else we've got to do here. I've got clips I could probably play from Sky, but they're long. I don't really want to do that, so let me find something else. So welcome to the room. I'm glad to have your company. All right, everything that's coming up is James O'Brien, and I don't want to play any more James O'Brien, as I've already played three of his, I think. Let's see if we've got any more Andrew Marr. Right, let's go back a few. That's 3 weeks ago. I've already probably played that one anyway. I don't want to. I played most of these, so I don't want to redo the same thing. Right, this is the only one. It's two and a half minutes of Andrew Marr talking about general elections and the lack of general elections.
Good evening. Diwali. And the king has a Hindu first minister who's even richer than he is. And we have, yet again, a new prime minister. And today is the Conservative Party's very last chance. This autumn has been the season of three prime ministers. They have fallen like leaves from a tree. It's also been the autumn when we came within touching distance of a genuine, complete financial collapse, a national humiliation which will affect all of us still for some time to come. And it was the autumn when the Conservatives experienced extinction-level polling, which would see them reduced to only a handful of seats, perhaps finishing them off entirely as a political party. You'd think they'd have learned their lesson by now, that they would finally link arms and support this new Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, as if they were a big, grown-up political party. Well, we'll see. After months of MPs wearing clown masks and trying to stab each other in the back with bananas, and Liz Truss screaming silently as the markets went south, that's what a lot of exhausted voters want. Peace. Calm. A little dullness. And it's what the markets want. Of course, a lot of other voters quite rightly want something else, a general election to kick the Conservatives out. But they were elected only 3 years ago on a manifesto which still stands. And until Tory MPs decide it's in their best interests to commit political suicide, a general election is something we are not going to get. Things have moved so fast over the last few days. Boris Johnson was barreling back from the Caribbean beach. He had momentum. He was going to stand. He had more than 100 votes. Oh, no, he didn't. Oh, no, he wasn't. Collapse of stout party. And then Penny Mordaunt of the Royal Navy was going to take the contest to the Tory party members. She had momentum. She had 100 votes. Oh, no, she didn't. Today she pulled out. Bad, Penny. It turns out that Rishi Sunak, who had said almost nothing recently but has smiled a lot, did have momentum. Suddenly, as of this afternoon, Rishi has lots and lots of new friends. Tonight, I'll be asking what kind of Prime Minister he might be, how big the task for him is, and whether the Tories are at last going to behave like grown-ups.
It'll probably last about a week, and then they'll be back to their old squabbling and infighting, I reckon. So we've got a week of peace out of this nightmare. I think that's probably it. We're just coming up to the half an hour mark. I think that's probably enough for this particular show. I will be back later on though, with some more kind of commentary, whatever people are saying. I'm going to leave LBC alone for a couple of days, I think. So I've been using a lot of LBC recently. So maybe some more GB news in the next one. You can kind of predict what everybody's going to say anyway. I know what James O'Brien's going to say, but he does it in such an eloquent way that it's worth playing. Well, that's pretty much it. So I shall see you again later. Bye for now.